listening to Prometheus by Minute. I am your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 77. This minute begins with Vickers exiting Prometheus and ends with Shaw collapsing in grief and horror. This moment is another example of upping the ante on a familiar scene. In Alien, much like the entire film, it was tense but downplayed. Here it is frantic, with everyone screaming and shouting. And you also have stunts and visual effects. On every conceivable level, this is the spectacle Alien never was. A familiar theme returns. We first heard it back in Minute 60 as Shaw and Holloway's romantic theme of sorts. Now it's played as bigger and more tragic. Shaw and Yannick argue with Vickers, believing they can save him. Meanwhile, Holloway has made up his mind. This is the end of the line for him. His skin is veiny and discoloured, but he hasn't transformed at all. Not really. I'll always wonder what he would have become. It's interesting that Vickers doesn't really want to kill Charlie. She warns him to keep back. She might be cold and ruthless, but she's not a murderer. She takes no joy in this task. And, a bit of behind-the-scenes trivia, this is Charlize's real reaction. She was nervous about lighting a man on fire, as one would be. So it's an example of breaking character, and yet this rare moment of vulnerability serves the character perfectly. This kind of stunt, though, is always easier to do practically rather than digitally. Being set on fire or jumping from great heights or any of those kinds of things are what stuntmen have been doing for decades. Corridor Crew on YouTube have a video where one of the guys sets himself on fire. It's really interesting how this kind of stunt is accomplished. Most of the time, the stuntman is actually freezing because the protective gel is really cold. So, they're almost looking forward to being set on fire. In the Furious Gods documentary, you see just how intense the preparation for this scene was. Here's some audio from that segment.
He's not coming on this ship.
It's a particularly tricky scene for Noomi emotionally because her love interest in the film is being burnt to death. And also for Charlize, because we actually gave her a practical flamethrower.
If you need to turn it on and off, if anything happens to go wrong, just switch that off and drop it.
I don't like the words. If something happens to go wrong.
So we had a little rehearsal with her, put her in a fire suit and made sure she was comfortable doing it. I'd had a stunt double for her, and we were just messing around, Ridley and I, and Ridley went, well, listen, wouldn't it be cool if we could get a shot of Charlize setting him on fire?
Yeah, that was my last day of shooting in London, actually. We did that, and I'm sure they made it the last day just in case something went aflame.
Setting anybody on fire is hard enough, you know, I mean, the preparation that goes into a full body burn is quite intense. Obviously, he's got all the gel suits on, he's completely protected, but the reality of any burn is it's a very dangerous thing to do. The fear that something had actually hurt the guy, and I think that came across, it's one of the few moments in the film where Charlize's character shows some vulnerability in that she's, you know, she's actually killing somebody. And you could see that in her eyes, that she didn't like doing it. She was uncomfortable doing it. And when we cut, we put the stuntman out, she was still quite freaky until the moment when the stuntman put his thumbs up and said he's okay.
Oh my God, I'm so shaking right now. Not my favorite thing, I have to say. I had like a little moment of, oh, this is badass and I'm really badass because I've got this flamethrower and I'm just being a badass in a Ridley Scott movie. And then I went, okay, don't want to burn this guy, and I want to be able to live with myself. And this, you know, these stunt guys are crazy. They're just insane.
For us as stunt people, it's, you know, that's what we do. We get set on fire, and it's no big deal. But for someone to actually torch somebody, it's a big deal for them. You know, you're kind of trusting on me saying that, yeah, he'll be fine. We've got this special gel. He's all gelled up. He'll be fine.
The flame was so hot that I had a space helmet on. And I could feel the heat like through the space helmet, and he's just lying there. So after one take, and I was like, did we get that? I was like, okay, no more. And then of course Ridley is just like, now we're going to put 7 cameras over there. You're going to do it again, and then we're going to do it here. And I was just like, don't want to burn this guy anymore.
And now, having seen how they did it, if you watch the minute closely, you can see that Holloway's stuntman is suddenly bulkier because of the flame-retarded suit underneath the costume, and he's wearing a rubber mask. Very subtle, though, because the flames, of course, obscure most of it. Charlize said this scene was shot multiple times. I can't imagine how expensive it must have been to make that many costumes only to destroy them. Having said that, though, I think that the difference between the costumes that are used by the heroes, so there's the hero costumes, if you look at behind-the-scenes stuff or auctions, they will say this is the hero costume worn by the main actor. I think multiples like those worn by stuntmen, those don't count as the hero costume, and I think, especially for stunt costumes, they don't make them out of the same material. If it's an expensive material, they'll make it out of something cheaper, and they don't put as much detail into it. Really hard to tell from the behind the scenes footage or the scene itself. It basically looks like the costume to me. I can't see any difference. With a professional crew, there's minimal chance of danger in a stunt like this. However, a friend of mine told me he knew a guy who did set himself on fire, and it did not go according to plan. And I'll keep the details as anonymous as possible to protect his privacy. So it was his birthday and he wanted to do something extreme. And here's the quote. He had a connection to the speedway, so he had access to a flame retardant suit. When you douse the coveralls in an accelerant, the accelerant will burn and the coveralls will be okay. He did this once and thought it was cool. The first problem is that the fire retardant needs to be reapplied before they're used again. The second problem is that the coveralls were a size too large for him. So they were rolled up to the ankle, which was a nice little place for the accelerant to pull. The third problem was that he was wearing nylon boxes. And the final problem was that the ocean he was going to run into to put himself out was at low tide. So the run was longer than he thought it would be, and when he did get there, it was quite shallow. So he was doused, lit, and immediately started getting burned. He ran down to the beach, stumbled, got up, and kept running, and then rolled around in the shallows, putting himself out. Mind you, screaming the whole time. So it was understandably pretty bad. It was also midnight at a beach about half an hour's drive from the nearest hospital. So he ended up getting third-degree burns to 40% of his body. Jesus, that story, I had to ask my friend about it again, because I just went, I need to include this because that story haunts me, and I thought it was worth mentioning in this episode, just to emphasize how dangerous and complicated these kinds of stunts are. It is not a matter of just putting on a flame retardant suit, putting on the gel, and then going for it. You know, stuntmen do not get enough credit for their work, despite literally putting their lives on the line. You really need to know what you're doing, and you need experience, and you need to have experienced people around you. If you watch how this scene was filmed, you've got guys coming in also wearing flame retardant suits, carrying fire extinguishers. Like, they are just on this guy immediately the moment they call cut. Death by flamethrower seems like the worst way to die, especially because I imagine those EVA suits are quite heat resistant, so you'd heat up before you actually started burning. A bullet to the head would have been much more merciful. Hell, maybe he could just take his helmet off and suck in the air of the outside. Apparently it's unbreathable. Oh, well, he's a mutant now, so maybe that wouldn't work. But still, I would do that first, then barbecuing myself, but perhaps that's just my personal preference. But of course, the flamethrower has become the iconic weapon of the Alien series, so it had to be used in this scene. I believe the flamethrower has appeared in every movie except, I think, Alien 3 and Covenant. I might be wrong, but I don't remember any instances of a flamethrower in either of those movies. I mean, fire does appear, but not out of a weapon. The flamethrower also plays a significant role in the game Alien Isolation. It's not a weapon you get in a lot of video games either, and so it's quite fun to play with. The flamethrower is quite an unusual weapon, generally speaking, and especially in science fiction, because there's a belief that fire on a ship would be dangerous. Now, if we're talking about a modern space station with no artificial gravity, then yes, fire is not your friend. That said, we actually know very little about how fire behaves in space or low gravity conditions. NASA's been working on spacecraft fire safety experiments, SAFFIRE, since 2012. Although their research into fire safety dates back much further than this project. For example, a previous project was called FLEX, or Flame Extinguishment Experiment. I wish I could tell you more, but the public information on the experiments ends in 2016 before the experiments were even conducted. But this isn't all that suspicious, as it can take years for this kind of information to become public. On this very podcast, I've covered scientific discoveries that, while they were known to academics prior to the release of Prometheus, the information was not published until many years later. One example was the Warren Field calendar discussed way back in Minute 8. Going back and listening to the early minutes is kind of weird. I'm 27, but my voice was still dropping, apparently. And, you know, still learning stuff about editing and stuff. And, and I changed my name somewhere in the middle there. I am not going to go back and re-record the opening of the first few episodes just so that my name's consistent. But back to fire. According to space.com, fire is a different beast in space than it is on the ground. When flames burn on Earth, heated gas rises from the fire, drawing oxygen in and pushing combustion products out. In microgravity, hot gases don't rise, so an entirely different process called molecular diffusion drives flame behavior. The article also features a short video showing a flame in space, and like all amorphous things in space, it becomes a sphere. One spooky detail is that for reasons unknown, droplets of methanol and heptane continue to burn even after all flames have been extinguished. So, fire is scary as shit in low gravity. Naturally, these aren't problems for advanced ships like the ones in the Alien films, as they all have artificial gravity, and oxygen is being manufactured constantly. Unlike in real life, where oxygen must be delivered to a space station from Earth and then recycled through a process of electrolysis. That's basically where the electricity is used to split the oxygen from the hydrogen molecules. I believe that was part of the movie The Martian and the book as well, where he was trying to manufacture oxygen and water to survive. The flamethrower is both a relatively recent and ancient weapon. People have been utilizing fire in warfare for about as long as warfare has been a thing. For example, some argue Greek fire may have been an early example of an incendiary weapon that propels the fire at a target. This was important in naval battles where fire needed to be launched at nearby boats. But otherwise, the flamethrower, as we currently recognize it, only dates back as far as the beginning of the last century in Germany and made its debut of sorts during World War I. Which explains why I tend to associate this weapon with Germans in World War I. Well, that and Americans in the Vietnam War, of course. Unlike a gun, which is more targeted, when you break out the flamethrower, it means you plan on the complete and total destruction of everything in your environment indiscriminately. In that sense, it may have been partly the reason fire was chosen as the xenomorph's weakness. When I see their marines in Aliens using guns, it creates a different vibe than when the crew of the Nostromo are using flamethrowers. There's something desperate and urgent and dramatic about the flamethrower in Alien. To kill this thing, you need to think outside the box. You have to go with the nuclear option. You have to use a weapon that may put you in danger too. There's a lot of symbolism to fire, I think, and I believe some of that may have be translated into Alien, whether consciously or not. Bit of a tangent here, but Alan Moore, he was on another podcast called Chapo Trap House, a really interesting episode, and he discusses how thoughts are a kind of magic, in that whether you're consciously thinking about it or not, ideas influence you, they shape the way you perceive the world. So I think there is potential to do this real deep dive into the semiotics, the symbolism, the connection between the xenomorph and fire, because both are these primordial entities. We're speaking of things like, you know, fire. It's almost a science versus religion thing here, where the xenomorph is this god-like supernatural being. It embodies our fears of space and the unknown. And then fire is the direct antithesis of that. It is the answer to the darkness. You know, fire is what allowed us to see in the dark, It warded off predators. It allowed us to eat the animals we hunted and killed. It allowed us to become human beings. We were able to accelerate our development because of this one discovery, this thing that is both natural but harnessed by us in these arguably unnatural ways. So I think there's a lot to be extracted from that relationship there, but we shall save that for another time, perhaps. While fire in any form is inherently dangerous, the danger posed by flamethrowers to the user are apparently exaggerated in popular culture. In the documentary Vietnam in HD, Platoon Sergeant Charles Brown, who evidently was born before the Peanuts comic strip was created, tells of how one of his men was killed when his flamethrower was hit by grenade shrapnel during the Battle of Hill 875. He says, "Flamethrower operators did not usually face a fiery death from the slightest spark or even from having their tank hit by a normal bullet, as often depicted in modern war films. The gas container, i.e. the pressurizer, is filled with a non-flammable gas that is under high pressure. If this tank were ruptured, it might knock the operator forward as it was expended in the same way a pressurized aerosol can bursts outward when punctured. The fuel mixture in the fuel containers is difficult to light, which is why magnesium-filled igniters are required when the weapon is fired. Fire a bullet into a metal can filled with diesel or napalm, and it will merely leak out the hole unless the round was an incendiary type that could possibly ignite the mixture inside. This also applies to the flamethrower fuel container." I really struggled with this minute because I couldn't think of anything to say. Guy gets lit on fire? What do you say about that? But that's because I wasn't looking at it from the perspective of the stunt and practical effects or even weaponry in the history. It's almost a downside to movie magic that when we see people getting hurt, we just accept it as part of the story, and most of us don't stop to consider how it was accomplished. And I really don't have any personal connection to this aspect of filmmaking. I have a background in costumes for theater, and I have done the odd student film here and there. The most that's ever involved there was maybe a prop gun, you know, squib, fake blood, but really nothing on this scale. And I've never really been a weapons guy. I do have a friend who, when we watch movies together, he always notices the weapons and he's like, "Oh, this is just, they've taken the end of this weapon and they put on the end of this one and then just added, you know, a torch or something, and it doesn't make any sense." And I never would have noticed. It's just never something I think, unless the weapon's really cool or really unusual. I definitely noticed the weaponry in Stargate, because they used the P-90, I believe, Earth military, and then the Jafar weapons are these weird sort of snake-headed things. So unless your weapon is that ridiculous, I'm probably not gonna notice. But it was fun delving into this scene from a perspective quite removed from my own. You know, I can bring a lot of perspective to costumes. And I think sometimes when I'm reviewing things, I almost focus on that to the exclusion of everything else. When I do an episode of Prometheus by Minute, I'm looking at the actor's performances. Well, I'm primarily looking at costume. And then I'm looking at the actor's performances, editing, lighting, camera angle, cinematography, the writing, basically everything, and then special effects and stunts and props and all that are like right down the bottom. So I guess it's been a learning experience, and that I should try to focus on everything and not just the things I like. And honestly, even though I'm not an expert on stunts or props, I think anything can be interesting if you hear it from the right people. If someone's really passionate about their job, telling you what they do for a living, it can be really exciting. Alright, that about covers it. This is Colson signing off. You can find me on TraviaDesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook.